Welcome to Truth Talk for Conscious Entrepreneurs. This is your host, Emma Churchman. Welcome to a limited series I've created titled Cleared for Profit, Heal Your Trauma to Grow Your Business, where I interview experts on how trauma informs your business.
It's my honor to have Dr. Deborah Sutton on our podcast series here today. Dr. Sutton has such an interesting background. She is a minister. She's a therapist. She teaches graduate courses. She facilitates corporate workshops and sacred retreats. She navigates healing in places of brokenness, particularly places affected by trauma, by shame. She does a lot of teaching and work around sexuality. And she talks about bridging the duality between sexuality and spirituality. So I'm really excited to have Deborah here with us, not only because she's an interfaith minister, I'm an interfaith minister, but because she talks about all the stuff that we're not supposed to be talking about related to shame and trauma and faith. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Emma. Thank you for the invitation to participate in this podcast series and these important discussions. It's my privilege to chat with you today.
Thank you. So give us a little background. What inspired you to start navigating trauma, shame, sexuality, brokenness, all of those faith, all of those different realities?
It's such a big question, and I will try and kind of keep it small enough for this container. But, you know, the first thought that comes to my mind and that I say to almost all of my clients is we teach what we most need to learn. And so I must have a lot of learning to do since my fields are both sexuality and spirituality. For me, I think that the focus specifically on trauma surfaced before I even was aware or recognized that that's what I was doing. And having grown up in a Roman Catholic faith tradition, we didn't talk about sexuality, and if we did, it was about don't do that, or, you know, you're embarrassing the family, kissing your boyfriend in front of the house like that. Or when I was older, I was raped by an acquaintance. And because I grew up in the house where we don't talk about sexuality, I didn't tell anyone. And I buried it really far, far deep inside. And so all of this learning, this negative learning about sexuality was in part for me impacted not only by my experiences as a person in the world, but as a person who grew up in a religious faith tradition that really neglected 100% of the person I am as a woman, as a sexual being, as a person deserving of love and care and value. And so that whole world clashed for me, the world between religion and sexuality. And it wasn't until in my late 20s, I had married early, and we were going to counseling, and I remember just blurting out in one of the sessions, I feel like I'm being raped all over again. And that was the beginning of my letting the cat, if you will, out of the bag. And that began my journey of exploring and studying and getting a master's degree and a PhD in human sexuality. But while I was in this framework for studying human sexuality, what I became very aware of was in that world, you weren't supposed to talk about religion. So it was the converse of what I had learned growing up. You don't talk about sexuality if you're in the religious world. And here I am in the sexuality world, and we're not supposed to talk about religion there because the two worlds were so divided. That's that dualistic thought that I talk about and try to address. And so for me, what is inspiring for me is to find and help people to find ways to bridge our whole self, because we are always sexual beings and spiritual beings. And there isn't ever a time we can leave home without one of those aspects of ourselves. And thus began my work in sexuality and spirituality. And what I found is that really at our core, almost all of us, I dare say everyone, has experienced some sort of trauma. For some, it's a trauma with a capital T, sexual abuse, physical abuse, the sudden death of a loved one. And it can be a trauma with a small T, hearing you're not smart, hearing how ugly you are over and over again, being told you're too heavy to lift up, or that girls should be seen and not heard, or that boys don't cry. We get all of these messages about our sexual selves and who others think we should be, that we internalize those and they become traumas. So everyone has these capital T and these small T traumas, and they affect the whole person, our brains, our mentality, our intellect, our heart, our soul, our spirit, and our body. And so that's why I really find it important to do this whole person work. And a lot of times it starts by addressing the wounded places in our lives, and that is often trauma.
That's a wonderful articulation and some really clear examples of what, I like that description, the big T and the little T trauma can show up as in your mind or in your lived experience. There are a lot of different directions we could take this in. Let's begin with trauma related to spirituality or religion or faith. Could you speak into how you see that showing up for people?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I think certainly not all faith traditions shun conversations, open conversations about sexuality, but I think a majority of religions do. And so when we are growing up in a religious tradition, and you know, let's say it could happen when we're younger, you know, we explore our bodies when we're young and we touch ourselves and we learn right away, you know, masturbation is bad. And then we go through puberty and our bodies change and our bodies develop. And I don't know, I never grew up as a boy in this lifetime anyway, but, you know, as a girl, you know, you're supposed to cover yourself and not let anyone see your developing breasts, and you were sexual, but you weren't supposed to show sexuality. And so there are all these messages that are in a religious container, you know, don't use birth to control, wait until you're married to have sex, never have a child unless you're married, you know. There are all of these messages that are around sexuality, and I'm using sexuality as more than just sexual intercourse. I use sexuality to encompass our comprehensive sexuality, who we are as males and females, and certainly who we are physically, but who we are as a whole person. When I walk out of the house, how I appear, how I feel about myself as a woman, the questions that I have about the stereotypes about being a woman, all of those things have to do with sexuality. And when we are, and I'm going to use this word because it's from my experience, when we are forbidden to talk openly about things that are natural to our very being, we learn shame. We learn how to take all of that and turn it inside and against ourselves. And oftentimes, for some folks in religious traditions, we do it to please God at the expense of being the very people God created in God's own image. And so it creates this dualistic thought that it's hard to live as a whole being if you're split about who you should be, who God wants you to be, who your family wants you to be, and then that really core internal self of who I want to be and how do I get there. And that's a real challenge for everyone to think about, how can I be myself and still be connected to the people I love and care about? And it starts for some people from their family and their faith traditions, but it's a continuing conversation that I really want to invite people to open up and talk about, because it's the talking about it that can create the shift or the change on both an individual and a local and a communal level, when we're able to talk about maybe even things that embarrass us or challenge us, because we learn values growing up, but if we don't decide for ourselves that there are values, then we're not really clear about who we are, and it's hard to manifest who we are, what we desire, what we want to do and be in this life.
Absolutely. And it occurs to me, I love that you're taking a stand, first of all, for having more conversations around that. I agree with you that this is the path for that, being more authentic and honest about who you really are and what's really going on for you is the path of healing. In my experience, not everyone is conscious about their shame or about the beliefs that they hold that are not in highest service to who they are. For example, the belief that I am not enough, or I am not worthy, or it's wrong or bad to be visible, to make money, to step outside your faith community, to talk about your childhood abuse, that kind of thing. There are these inherent beliefs that people carry that they carry as if they are fact, and they may not be conscious of the impact that those beliefs are having. Can, from your perspective as a therapist, can you speak into that a little bit? And does that make sense?
I think it makes absolute total sense. So one of my favorite quotes from Brené Brown is her definition of shame. And she says that shame is the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Something we've experienced, done, or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. And as a result, we believe false truths about ourselves. And I think that that's what you're saying. Those false truths might sound like, I don't matter, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough. And those false truths are anchored in an experience that often comes when we were children growing up, because when we're children, we don't look at the adult that we're having an experience with and say, you're a bad adult, or you're a bad parent, or you're doing the wrong thing. We take that experience, and instead of being able to look at the adult and say, that's really inappropriate adult, we turn it on ourselves and say, I'm doing a bad thing, I must be a bad person, or I'm not good enough, because if I was good enough, such and such wouldn't be happening, or so and so would love me. And those negative beliefs that we have about ourselves, while they're anchored in the past, they keep repeating themselves as we get older. And so we find new experiences in which those messages keep surfacing. And so what happens, and when people come into therapy, you can kind of, even if they don't hear them right away, I can hear what they're saying underneath is that, you know, I just have never felt loved. I just have never felt like I deserve to, you know, own such a beautiful house or have such a beautiful family or risk leaving this job to start something that would be really important or meaningful to me. And when the word not shows up somehow in people's language, to me, it's a buzzword to pay attention to, because the not, using your language, Emma, is pointing to one of our limiting beliefs. It's telling us what we're telling ourselves we are unable to do or don't believe about ourselves. And when we can begin to pay attention to the knots, both K-N-O-T-S and N-O-T-S, in our lives, the things that bind us, that keep us stuck, then we can begin to do the work to think about how did I come to that belief? And then as an adult looking at the same experience, can we reframe that belief? Can we begin to say, I am worthy. I was worthy then, and I am worthy now of a loving relationship, of a career that excites me and that uses my passion and gifts and skills. And that for me, I think that spirit has, you know, manifested within me to share with the world. And when we can begin to pay attention, and that's hard work to pay attention to the knots in our lives and to reframe it, we can then create some new patterns for how we want to believe and act and live in the world.
And what I hear in that is that we are the ones who ultimately give ourselves the validation that we desire for existing in the world in the way that we're meant to.
Absolutely. I mean, think about, I'll tell you my story, but think about this, and all of us have some version of this same story is, you know, I have two master's degree and a PhD, and I can know that I'm a smart woman. I'm an educated woman. I didn't get there, you know, without putting some hard work and some effort into it. But I grew up believing that I wasn't smart, that I wasn't good enough. And so no matter how many A's I got or how many people said, you are doing great work, or this is really fabulous, do more of this, it didn't matter how much somebody from outside of me gave me recognition or validation. It matters how much I believe it. And when I can shift what I know about myself to what I believe about myself, then I'm much more able to one, receive any outside validation, but that's not what really matters. I'm much more able to fuel what I believe about myself is worthy, and therefore I can act in the world as an intelligent woman, as a brave woman, as a woman who's worthy enough or good enough or that I matter. And whatever that theme is for someone telling you something you don't believe isn't going to make you believe it.
Right.
And
right.
And
that speaks to a very interesting dynamic that I see with a lot of conscious entrepreneurs who will be on this emotional roller coaster. And the way it plays out is that these folks are continually seeking external validation. These are folks who carry stories of, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. And the way it looks like in their business is they'll send out a sales email to their newsletter, to their tribe, and 5 minutes later, they have not made any sales and they think there's something wrong with them. Or mm-hmm. they'll speak on stage and no one will tell them what an amazing job they did. Or they'll do a mm-hmm. Facebook Live and no one will engage with the video. So they are allowing how they feel about themselves and their businesses to be dictated by whether or not other people affirm them. And that, it's just a recipe for disaster, because mm-hmm. it's not anyone else's responsibility to validate who you are as a being and to validate your purpose. That is your responsibility. That's God's responsibility. That's the universe's responsibility, from my perspective.
Oh, I so agree. One of the things I will often say to people is that we cannot manage other people. Is the only one that we're responsible for and have any jurisdiction over is ourselves. We can only manage ourselves. And so, you know, using some of your examples, putting something out and expecting a response is trying to manage what other people do. And that will always be a recipe for failure. But if we put something out and manage our own self, we can look at it and say, huh, what would I do differently if I was going to do it again? Or I really love this. And it doesn't matter that anybody didn't respond to me. I took a risk. I put it out there and I'm applauding myself for getting this, you know, live Facebook feed out there, even if nobody responds to it, because I did something different, something daring, something brave. You know, sometimes when people have experienced trauma, and you've heard this before, is that doing something new creates fear. And that's the trauma speaking up. And the oldest part of our brain is called the reptilian brain. And that's the place in our brain that's designed to protect us. So we have instinctual responses, right? Flight, fight, or freeze. Those are instinctual responses. And what I'd like to encourage people to do is to add a fourth F, which is to face it. When we confront trauma, we might want to flee from it. We might freeze in reflecting on it. We might want to run away from it, but when we face it, when we turn around and pay attention to what's happening inside of us in this moment, that I feel so scared that nobody answered me, nobody wrote me back, nobody bought what I'm selling. When we turn it around and face it, then we have more recognition and more understanding of what is motivating us, and we have the opportunity, if it's not working, to do it differently, to shift it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the end result of that, so for entrepreneurs listening to this episode, the end result of that is the less you care about what other people think, and the more you're willing to validate yourself, stand in your own power, confront the trauma. Deborah, I love that language. The more you're willing to do that and put yourself out there, the more money comes towards you in your business. Mm-hmm. That is the experience of abundance. And the goal, for me personally, the goal isn't always money. The goal is being able to be more of who I am in this business that I have created for myself. But in order for me to be at the point where I am in my business, there was tons of confrontation that had to happen. There was a whole reckoning that had to happen inside of me of deciding that who I am at a fundamental level is okay, even if mm-hmm. no one else around me thought that who I was, that thought that I was enough or thought that I was okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In family systems theory, we call that differentiation, right? differentiation is the ability to be yourself and still stay connected to other people. And so I can wear the craziest clothes if I choose to. That's maybe being an expression of my sexuality. I can be myself, and no matter how many criticisms I get about the crazy clothes I might wear, it doesn't matter. I can still be in relationship with the people who are criticizing me and wear my crazy clothes because it's an expression of who I am and who I like to be. And we do that, and we don't do that in a variety of ways. But differentiation is risky business because it means we have to show up. And showing up is a vulnerable act. You know, we're saying, I want to be seen, and it is kind of scary to be seen and to hold ourselves in the face of people looking back and wondering whether or not they're going to like us. I remember I taught a sexuality class for a middle school group, and I asked the boys and girls, I think they might have been in fourth grade when I did this, I asked them to write a list of 10 things that they liked about themselves and 10 things they didn't like about themselves. And I gave them some time to write their list, and after the time was up, which list do you think they were able to complete first?
The one about what they did not like about themselves.
Absolutely. And they even went beyond 10, and some of them never even put something that they liked about themselves. And when we think like that in fourth grade, when we're 9 and probably earlier than that, we often think like that as adults too. We think about what's wrong with me instead of what's right with me. What do I love about me? And if I can love these things about me, then it matters less that maybe other people don't value them as much because I value them. And that is a really, really challenging and difficult lesson to move through. And it's an important one.
Deborah, in your professional opinion, why do you believe that humans always default to what is wrong with us?
Wow. I think that happens on several levels. I mean, the religious part of me says that I think, religion has created a belief where humans are bad and evil and there's sin. And I think that that wasn't always true, but I think that more, later Christian church has been able to kind of say religion is good and sexuality is bad. And even in people who are not religious, who don't go to church, who may say they don't believe in God, I think that they have adopted some of these cultural beliefs that have permeated at least our American culture with very long, long roots. And so we call people who speak well about themselves conceited, or if we put ourselves first, selfish, or, you know, if we do something that matters to us but maybe makes somebody else unhappy, we tell them there's something wrong about that. And eventually people begin to buy into those negative beliefs about caring for self and valuing self and being important also. To me, what I would love for people to know is that everyone matters. The other person doesn't matter more than you. The other person matters as equally as you do. And therefore, they don't get to have more power or that we get to do things to please them if it displeases us, because there's no equality in that relationship when we lower ourselves and we punish ourselves to please somebody else. that is an unbalance, and it never manifests the true essence of one's personhood from their core. I think that voices like yours and voices like mine and you know, for example, in the Me Too movement, these voices that have taken places where women and men have been deeply wounded through various forms of trauma, they have stayed silent because culture has created this kind of like my upbringing growing up. If I talk about it, I'll be bad, I'll be wrong, I'll be punished, I'll be dirty, I won't be loved. And so we stay silent. But what happens is that in that silence and in that secrecy, we judge. We judge ourselves, and, you know, judging ourselves negatively and harshly minimizes the value of the person we were created to be. And so one of the things I always, always try to say to people is remember two things. Shame cannot grow when it encounters air and empathy. And what I mean by that is that there's no room for shame to get any bigger when we tell our story. Because in telling it, we set it free. And we're not hiding anymore. And we have room then to heal it. And empathy is about somebody hearing that story and saying to you that you are still a valued and a loved person. And that while what happened to you was hard and wrong and undeserving of the wonderful person that you are, your story is important to be told and heard because it's a part of who you are. And when we start hiding those parts of who we are, we keep repeating silently and verbally and through our actions that there's something wrong with us. And really, my belief is that we are whole in our brokenness. There is nothing wrong with us. We are whole people with some brokenness within us. But it doesn't demean or take away from the value of each individual person.
Yeah, I started tearing up as you were sharing that last bit. Thank you for that. I know that's going to resonate with so many of the folks listening to this episode. Because what you're doing is you're taking a powerful stand for people to love themselves exactly who they are. And that's a beautiful witness that you're offering. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. How can people learn more about you?
Well, I would love to have people learn more about me and me learn about some people who would like to connect with me. So people can find me on my website, which is DebraSutton.com. And people can also email me if they'd like to talk to me one-on-one. And that email address is, again, DrDebraSutton@gmail.com. And if you find me on Facebook, that's under my business name, which is Solitudes LLC on Facebook. And I'd love for you to leave me a note there if you go there.
Wonderful. It's been a real treat. Treat's not the right word. It's been wonderful to have you on the show because the permission that you are giving to everyone listening is phenomenal. And thank you so much for that.
Well, I really, again, appreciate your inviting me to share. And I have to say, you know this, Emma, that it's an important thing to share, but it's also still scary to sit on the other side of this phone and be interviewed and put my thoughts and my beliefs out there. And yet it's about practicing what we preach. And so I really do appreciate the opportunity to take this risk and this step forward with you.
Absolutely. It's my honor.
Are you a conscious entrepreneur who has hit a financial ceiling in your business? Do you find yourself up in the middle of the night wondering where your next sale is going to come from? Do you struggle with working harder and harder yet not getting better results? Do you have a deep desire to take your business to the next level, but you aren't sure how to get there? If so, let's talk. I offer 30-minute complimentary consultations specifically designed to help diagnose what's keeping you from growing your business. To schedule your consultation, go to emmachurchman.com/consult, Emma.